Is it time to admit that this recovery is officially over? Well, we're going to talk about that coming right up.
You are about to hear the opinions, suggestions, and observations of a licensed real estate broker in California. Since each situation can be unique, do not consider anything said here as legal advice for your specific needs. Always seek out the advice of a suitable professional in your area for advice tailored to your situation. Please remember that when following advice, your results may vary. Please also understand that the information provided here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the speaker considers important.
Ah! You seem to understand. I'm not locked in here with you.
That's it!
You're locked in here with me!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Real Estate Realities with the Rebel Broker. My name's Robert Whitelaw, and I am the Rebel Broker. Licensed real estate broker in the state of California, member of the National Association of Realtors. But please, don't hold that against me. Here we are with another chunk of truth that may not go down too well. We'll talk about that in a second. The ongoing struggle with Blog Talk Radio to liberate my RSS feed continues. It's starting to sound like they're going to do it. It supposedly has been referred to the IT department to get squared away. So hopefully by, I don't know, this time next week or, I don't know, maybe even before the weekend, everything will be liberated and I'll be able to start running the show the way I want to run it without having to worry about any of the rules and whatnot relating to Blog Talk Radio. In the meantime, I am still double posting. I'm putting shows on Blog Talk Radio and on my new host, where the primary way to get at the show is going to be through therebelbroker.com. And if everything goes according to plan, those of you who listen on iTunes and Stitcher and other wonderful things will not have to worry. It'll all just automatically switch over. Still amazingly annoyed with that without ever checking with me, getting my permission, asking. They sort of commandeered my RSS feed, particularly since I specifically asked that question before I started broadcasting on Blog Talk Radio and said I wanted to maintain control of my RSS feed. And they told me that the way I had it set up, it would accomplish that. And they went ahead and did what they did anyway. So anyway, that's a conversation we can have at another time. We've got some interesting stuff to cover today. Is the housing recovery over? You know, and a lot of us, well, us, I would argue that, you know, in a lot of ways, it never really happened. A lot of the things that have really forced prices in the direction they're going is bizarre stuff. It's really been ridiculously low inventory. People have still been moving into these areas, and they're just the low inventory has sort of forced people to go into this mode. It's been a sort of classic supply and demand scenario where the supply just wasn't there to satisfy the need. So prices have gone up. We've talked about this. We have lots of bits and pieces of this just over the last couple of weeks. You can talk about the show we did a few days ago about consumer opinion. That's a great one to consider. I think that one was a shocker. And it's what's really crazy is when I start seeing mainstream – well, not mainstream, but pretty – prominent real estate news outlets saying the kinds of things I've been saying for a while, because every once in a while I feel like this voice kind of out in the wilderness. You know, to get a little validation for, and I'm not even, you know, with how little we hear in terms of getting the truth from these folks, maybe it's hard to call it validation, but at least hearing what I've been saying being said by others kind of makes me feel a little better. One other piece of news that I should probably share is there's been a change on Facebook. There is now a pod. What I've done is I had a page on Facebook that served as the home for both Whitelaw & Sons Real Estate and for the podcast. That page started as a podcast page. Then I turned it into a both of those things page. Now I've turned it back into a podcast page. Now, just about everybody who has currently liked that page, visited that page, posted on that page has been coming from this show. So that's why I did that. So it's now back to being a podcast-only page. I created a different page for my business located in Morgan Hill for real estate. So The links, I think, have changed because when you rename it, it redoes the number. So I'm going to have to probably update that stuff on the websites. I literally just did that less than an hour ago. So just to give everyone a heads up, I'm not sure if the existing links you have work. I'm not even sure if the link currently at my website works to take you to the proper Facebook page. But I'll get that squared out within the next day. So just an update on that. In other news, I have finally figured out how to create a coupon code for the rental property in Hawaii. For those listeners who are interested in taking advantage of that, I am going to offer a discount coupon code. I'm going to share that in tomorrow's show because I want to run a test run through it using a coupon code to see how it works. I found the mechanism for it finally earlier today, and I want to sort of do a test run on it before I share it. So that I can make sure it's working properly for everyone. So that will be part of tomorrow's show. What else? Is there anything else awesome that I'm going to be needing to share here? So I would appreciate it. Now, as you, I've sort of decided I want to focus more energy on the show. I want to focus more energy on sharing strategies, insights, information, education, and everything to help people, to help empower folks to achieve their goals. Now, of course, this is going to look at most of that from a real estate focus, but there's also the information that we have, the stuff that helps people succeed really transcends topic, at least in terms of personal things you can do to sort of put yourself on the right track towards success. There are things that are independent of whether or not your end goal is making money in real estate or getting your business off the ground. There are just traits that contribute to success in general. So I want to make this show about those things too. One way to promote the show, one way to help me, one way to make sure the show will continue is for you to head over to iTunes. Subscribe in iTunes and write a quick review. The more reviews I get, the better the chance I have of getting into the new and noteworthy. It's kind of odd to want to be in new and noteworthy when the show is now in its eighth year. but there you go. So anything you can do, I'd appreciate. Anyone else you can turn on to the show, I'd appreciate it. I'm going to start doing a very aggressive get out the word campaign, and anyone out there who can take part, who can participate, who can help me grow the show, I would be deeply appreciative. So there's that. And of course the Twitter feed will still continue to get fed into the Facebook page. If you'd like to head on over to the Twitter page, that's Twitter Rebel Broker is just my handle. On Twitter, you can also go to www.therebelbroker.com, click the Twitter icon, and that'll take you right to my Twitter page where you can subscribe. And that is where I basically tweet out all the articles, updates and information about when sometimes about show-related things. When a show is done and it's been posted, it gets posted to Twitter and to the Facebook page. So it's a great way to, A, get access to some of the information I think is worth noting about real estate and the economy in general. Remember, I'm a strong believer in understanding all the things that feed into the economy, and part of today's show is clearly going to play into that. There was another article that I may actually want to talk about. I'm just now realizing I didn't open it, but I'm sure it's basically the effect that what's going on in China is going to have. And it's talking about which states will suffer the most. For those of you who don't know, China devalued their yuan, and that's kind of a big deal. It affects an awful lot of companies. For those of you who have investments in Apple, for instance, as I do, that's a bad thing. There's a lot of different things going on. We're going to talk about a few of those today and how they primarily affect our real estate market. So let's go ahead and jump in. This is one of those rare shows in the new format where I actually have quite a few articles to go through all on this subject. They all sort of act in support of this idea that we're in for some trouble. The first one I'm going to jump to here is from Housing Wire. It's dated August 13th, which is today. It's titled, "Here's Proof the Housing Recovery is No Longer Recovering." And they make reference to consumers don't think it's the right time to buy. And we talked about that a few shows back because it was such a dramatic increase in the numbers. And some of the things I brought up as interesting to note are brought up in this article. Things like how now is a good time to buy, as put out by the National Association of Realtors, the California Association of Realtors, the Mortgage Brokers Association, all the folks that basically make money off of this whole process, whether they make money off of you borrowing money or whether they make money off of the real estate agents who want to be real estate agents, that they're all about singing a happy tune because that's what keeps things moving right along for them, right? Now, strong housing performance, real or imagined, dropped 7 percentage points to 45%. We already talked about that a couple of shows ago. Senior Vice President and Chief Economist at Fannie Mae is saying deteriorating consumer assessments of income growth over the past year, as well as increased caution around the direction of the economy and personal financial expectations, may be contributing to the pullback in sentiment. I think we even used that exact same quote when we talked about it a few days ago. Let's see. And the other stunning number from that was a Fannie Mae survey that more consumers are saying our so-called recovering economy is on the wrong track. That opinion is shared by 54% of the population that were polled. And here's the thing. When we're at a position like this, if we try to project to our back in time, when we were at this kind of point before, things got a lot worse before they got any better at all. Now, you can find markets where things are doing great. Denver, Seattle, San Francisco Bay Area, Manhattan, where bidding is going crazy. Home prices and consumer attitudes are at odds with that Fannie Mae survey. But those are the exceptions. My market is a huge exception. High-tech jobs bring high-tech wages, according to this article, and that tends to be true. But, you know, I've represented an awful lot of folks who are in high-tech jobs here who, given what it costs to live here, are not making high enough wages. I mean, I realize that someone making $80,000 a year may sound like a lot of money everywhere else, because it is. But when your average price of a home is nudging up close to $1 million, $80,000 a year is not a lot of money. It's kind of ridiculous. It also is good to make note that for the vast majority in the middle class in America, and I'm quoting the article here, today wages have stagnated or even dropped, as many who once had full-time employment of 40-plus hours per week have had their hours cut for a variety of reasons. Those reasons include Obamacare and rising minimum wages, to mention just a couple. We've talked about that here before. This is the national trend of – A, we stop counting certain folks who are unemployed for whatever reason we decide is important. Plus, we also need to understand that the vast majority of jobs that are created are not careers. They are part-time jobs. They are low-paying jobs. These are not high-wage jobs that are being created. You don't build a recovery on those kinds of jobs. Now, other signs of problems include the recent report from Trey Garrison on Housing Wire. Auction.com warns on slow existing home sales. Now, this was I almost used that as a starting point for my show today. I was actually working on some show notes in general, and that was sort of going to be the hub of the question. But then the more I read, the more I realized the whole thing is in trouble. Existing home sales may be going down, but that's really just one piece of this puzzle. Now, Garrison quotes the ever-optimistic Rick Sharga, executive vice president at Auction.com, and an expert industry analyst, is saying, quote, while we'll believe that the housing market continues to recover from the most volatile boom and bust cycle we've ever seen, that recovery continues to be uneven, taking an occasional step backwards. And these guys are the optimists in the crowd. The folks who are saying that are the guys who are all the ones usually singing right alongside Lawrence Yun, who works for the National Association of Realtors as their chief economist, singing the praises of whatever's going on. Sharga, this same guy who's usually a cheerleader for the real estate industry, also said that one potential cause for concern at Auction.com is that as home prices continue rising, which is significantly outpacing wage growth, many markets are becoming too expensive for first-time buyers. Sharga adroitly said that this situation effectively causes the entire home buying engine to seize up. It also portends a drop in home prices. That's just a natural effect of this kind of thing happening. Now, you mix in the Federal Reserve's recent musings about a potential rise in interest rates, and that may cause concern. I'd like to also point out that in other news, it's now sounding like they're not going to raise interest rates in September. I actually put aside an article I thought might do work for another show in which the Fed starts talking – it starts looking like they aren't going to raise rates until after the election. What a surprise. I'd love to say you heard it here first, but I'm not sure who else might be out there saying it. They are so clearly a political organization in terms of how they schedule things and what they do. The Fed really needs to just get completely flushed, but that's a whole other problem. It's not just homebuyers and homeowners who have concerned about the overall economy and the housing sector. According to a new report from Zillow Group, rental affordability has steadily worsened. The report states that Americans living in rentals spent nearly one-third of their incomes on housing in the second quarter of this year, which is the highest share in recent history. Rental affordability worsened from last year in 28 of the 35 largest metro areas covered by Zillow. What's interesting is this is usually a instance that encourages home purchasing. But it's not. Even this isn't putting any upward pressure on home purchases. Even people who are having to pay ridiculous rents that are going up as much as they can year over year are not out there hitting the pavement to try to find a house to buy to freeze their housing costs. The only way to explain that is just a complete lack of faith in the market in general, no matter what angle you want to come at it from. It's a, I don't trust that homes are really worth what they're currently worth. I don't think that buying a house now will make sense a few years later. There is nothing good that comes from any of this. All these numbers that should normally push a market a certain direction doesn't do it. It's not enough to overcome the opinion of the average person. And remember, we talked about this before too. When you say 54% or 48% of people, you have to realize that each one of those individuals has the mushroom effect, because it's the people around them that see what's going on with them that also get their opinions tainted or their actions tainted. So while 54% may believe things are going bad, or 54% are talking about how their lives are worse, there was also that part of that survey that we were talking about. It affects, it spills over onto other folks who are observing that happening, folks in their family who are having to loan them money or let them stay in their house or whatever's happening to keep them going. Other people see that, and it affects the decisions that they make. It's also been widely reported that the central bank in China is now making emergency moves to prop up its currency after it attempted to move to a free float market-based pricing of the yuan. For those of you who don't know, this is a much longer story. We could do an entire show on this. A lot of people like to talk about China like it's able to be tracked as anything else. What we know about the Chinese economy and what goes on in the economics of China is basically whatever they tell us. We don't get to independently verify bupkis. They basically throw a rock with a note on it over this wall every once in a while and say, hey, everything's going great. But how their money is valued has nothing to do with market-based pricing. Right? That's what they were talking about converting it to. China reportedly was forced to let their currency float because it faces a serious, if not severe credit crisis, which was sparked by a dramatic spike higher in interbank lending rates. With the world's second largest economy showing signs of real trouble, there was great concern in America and across the globe that economic woes could turn worse in short order. So let's try to summarize. I mean, if you want to look and see how much business gets done between the United States and China, how much investment there is in America that is actually affected by China. We're not just talking about Apple. We're talking about Samsung and virtually every TV and dishwasher, computer, everything, whatever phone is currently in your hand. The microphone I'm talking into is probably made there. It's staggering. I mean, for anyone who's tried to go out and let's play it for a day. Here's something for the rebel achievers. That's something I could call y'all. Anyway, let's do some homework. Let's go shopping today or tomorrow and see how many things we can buy, but not buy versions of them made in China, right? It usually says made in wherever on everything. I tried to do this with something as simple as a fan for one of my boys to have in his room. There wasn't one. There wasn't one at the Home Depot. There wasn't one at the Lowe's. There was none. I managed to go to some little store and found one made in Canada. But and they had three different ones from the same company made in Canada, and only one of them was made in Canada. The rest of them were made in China. It's almost impossible. So imagine how much money is wrapped up in that kind of general business where everything is made there. And then try to compound that to figure out what happens when suddenly all of that stuff changes because the value of the currency in China goes down. Now think about all the American companies that make stuff where China was their next big market, where all Apple is a perfect example. The vast majority of them of the money they made in their last profit statement was from China, was from growing the market in China. Well, if the yuan goes down in value, that means the prices for your iPhone in China goes way up. So suddenly a lot fewer people are able to afford it. It's inflation and it's bad, and it's also something that we may have to be dealing with. So there's a little bit there. That might be enough for some concern. That might be enough. And it was enough for this person to conclude that even cautious optimism is still too much. So let's hit a few other tidbits that might have you losing sleep. Now, this one is from our favorite folks that I like to occasionally refer to as the tinfoil hat crowd. However, they've been right a lot more than they've been wrong, and particularly some of the more critical stuff. They talk a little bit, because since we're on the topic of the China's devaluation, I thought we might want to hit some of the top U.S. state exporters to China. And I say exporters because it's a big deal, because that means China buys the stuff. And when they're with the value of their currency going down, it's going to negatively affect that. Now, they devalue their currency 3 consecutive days in a row as of the writing of this article, which was today. And as of last time I checked. And this is just the beginning. The devaluation has been just under 5%, and it's caused markets around the world to completely take a dump. You know, as I pull this up, at the time I'm recording this, obviously the stock markets have closed. The Dow Jones Industrial was up $5.74. NASDAQ was up 10.83. Apple was down 9 cents. eBay was down 2 cents. Google was down $3.11. Amazon, Disney, I track Amazon and Disney just because I like the companies, but they're both up. Amazon's up 3.75 and Disney's up 0.53. But so go figure. I'm not sure why that is. Disney's clearly focused on entertainment. In tough times, entertainment tends to always be a little bit more resilient. So that actually kind of makes sense to me. Amazon kind of surprises me, but I'd have to look into it more to see why I should be pessimistic on that one. So I thought it would be important for those of you who don't think the U.S. is heavily dependent on China as a market aren't really getting it. And why is this important? Because it will directly affect what happens here. Because if suddenly these markets shrivel up, we're in deep doo. So let's hit them real quick. Now, number 15 on the list is Indiana, and they export $2.6 billion to China. From 2005 to 2014, there was 329% growth in how much they sent to China. North Carolina, $2.7 billion, 222% increase from 2005 to 2014. Iowa, $2.9 billion, 391% increase. Alabama, $3 billion, 579% increase. Georgia, $3.2 billion, 193%. Did I say that twice? Alabama was 579% increase. Georgia was 193% increase. Minnesota, $3.2 billion, a 235% increase. Ohio, $3.9 billion, a 252% increase. Michigan, $3.9 billion, 425% increase since 2005. Oregon, $4 billion, 92% increase since 2005. New York was $3.9 billion with 92%. Oregon is $4 billion with 424% increase since 2005. South Carolina, $4.3 billion with a 622% increase. Illinois with $6 billion with a 281% increase. Texas, $10.3 billion, 101% increase since 2005. California, $14.9 billion, a 93% increase since 2005. Finally, Washington State, number one, $15.3 billion in exports, 365% growth since 2005. Now, every single one of these states, if they see a significant drop in these, and the guess is they will, the logical guess, the odds-on favorite guess is they will, these states would be in far worse shape than they currently are. When this devaluation is complete, the companies in these states will be 10% less competitive. Their exports will decline. When exports decline, companies fire workers. Fired workers can't afford their mortgage. This is a big deal. So there's just another little brick in the wall. We're setting the stage, right? Next, mortgage applicants flat in latest weekly survey. Purchase index up 20% year over year. We're basically seeing super flat mortgage applications. This is one of those few things where when we just look at it in over recent time, right? I usually like to prefer a year over year increase. It's up 20% year over year, but it's the flatness that we're seeing that's really kind of shocking, because we shouldn't be seeing that. 2014 was the lowest year for refinance activity since 2000, and refinance activity will probably stay low for the rest of 2015. And this is according to Calculated Risk, and the article is MBA mortgage applications flat in latest weekly survey. So we're not seeing a whole lot of activity, which backs up our other data, right? We're seeing data that folks aren't buying, and this obviously reflects it. Recession imminent as wholesale inventory surge, sales disappoint, autos worst since 2009. I thought I'd point this one out. Now, this is a great one with some great charts that if you're interested, you should check them out. They're over at Zero Hedge again. And as I said, the title of this article is Recession Imminent as Wholesale Inventory Surge, Sales Disappoint, Autos Worst Since 2009. The ratio of wholesale inventories to sales pushed back up to 1.3, its highest since the recession. What's interesting is they have a chart here that goes all the way back to 2001, so the dot-com bubble. Then we've got the section that's represented by the housing bubble, and we start to see the exact same kind of activity happening right now that started to happen just before those things. It's kind of scary. It's an enormous red flag. It points to nothing but recessionary indicators. And when you get a potential drop in employment based on a lack of demand for American goods in China because of what's going on there, that is not a good mix. The wholesale inventories to sales, bad, very much pointing towards recessionary tendencies. Automotive inventories to sales, a bigger than expected 0.9 surge in inventories. That's the biggest since April of 2014, was accompanied by a considerably slower than expected 0.1% growth in sales, weakest since March, suggests that Field of Dreams corporate planning remains in place. Most crucially, as the Atlanta Fed warns, lower inventory investment will subtract 1.7 points from Q3 real GDP growth. The higher Q2 build, the worse Q3 will be, though we are sure economists will extrapolate Q2 growth no matter what. So there's that, sort of a general trends in what's going on with wholesale things and car sales, which again sort of feeds into what people are thinking. Finally, even the feds are being forced to admit that recession is kind of right around the corner here. The third quarter GDP forecast slashed to just 0.77%. The Atlanta Fed had released its latest forecast for quarter three GDP growth, lowering it to just 0.7, citing an inventory drag of negative 2.2 percentage points. The Fed estimate is now 75% below the street's consensus, and that's a bad thing. The GDP Now model forecast for real GDP growth, seasonally adjusted annual rate in the third quarter of 2015, was 0.7% on August 13th, down from 0.9% on August 6th. Contribution of inventory investment to third quarter real GDP growth has declined from 1.8 percentage points to negative 2.2 percentage points. All of this stuff, and I get there's amazingly dry and annoying numbers involved here, but all of these things are just little bricks in the wall of bad things are coming. Now the big question is, how big of a hit do we take? And my feeling is that a lot of this is going to be focused in areas that maybe have seen the most irrational increase in value in home values. It may not be something that really hits the average folks, but I'll tell you, in those states that have a lot of business with China, some jobs are going to get lost. There's really – you can't have the value of the Chinese currency go down like that without it affecting what they are purchasing overseas by some percentage. If it really hits a wall, we're in deep trouble in a lot of those areas. So between that, between the general perception on the part of the average person that their personal situation isn't better and that they expect it to get worse, on the expectations that the economy is going the wrong direction, none of these things indicate anything but at the very best estimate, a flat market, and in a more realistic sense, a downturn in markets. So what do you do as a buyer, seller, and investor in these cases? Well, I think for a lot of investors and buyers, it's the same thing. If you don't have to buy, I'd say continue to keep an eye out for those great deals. If you happen to come across a great deal, fantastic. Don't let yourself get into some crazy bidding war. Be very rational about what you're doing. Have a very clear understanding of what kind of an investment you're making or problems you're solving. At the way rents are going right now, I don't see them going down. So if you're an investor who's focusing on rents and you're able to put a deal together where the math works and you're positive cash flow with math, let that continue to be your guide. If those numbers don't work, don't buy. I think rents will continue to be high for a while, for the foreseeable future. I think we're going to have to see a pretty robust recovery in jobs and in a lot of other things in order for that to change. If you're a buyer and you're looking to freeze your housing costs, I think what you want to do is have it be a situation where you're calculating what your end of month expenses and income are. It would be good to lock down your monthly housing costs. You can do that through signing a longer term lease. Maybe you can get a lower month to month payment now if you commit to 2 years or 3 years or whatever you want to try and do. If you just can't purchase a place, or if it's just financially not feasible to purchase in your area, or if you were to make that purchase, it's really not competitive with the rent you're paying. In other words, your mortgage would be more or right around the same amount. You'd want to do the math over a longer term because for most folks, you can usually find the sweet spot, and then that can help to dictate how much money you spend. I would strongly suggest that folks who have been looking at single-family residential homes only and but are very interested in getting their housing costs fixed, I would consider opening up the opportunities for townhomes and condos. I wouldn't go as far as mobile homes, but if you can get, because even that doesn't freeze your costs, right? It freezes them at least into a more narrow window because typically you're paying rent on the space or an HOA fee. If for whatever reason you really, really want to buy a mobile home, though, that's a whole other discussion. You never want to buy a mobile home where you don't actually own the ground that it's sitting on, simply because at some point someone can ask you to move your mobile home off of it. And a mobile home that's already in place is not worth more than, you know, $5,000. It usually costs you more to get rid of it than anything else. So I wouldn't suggest doing that. So, you know, it really comes down to your financial situation right now, what your goals are, what you're trying to achieve. I wouldn't let this beat you down into submission if you're a buyer. Keep looking. Strategies could be to broaden your search into other areas. If you're one of those folks who's desperately trying to find a place right there in the city center, and that's where the crazy pricing is happening, get out of the city center. Be willing to embrace a commute. My feeling is that it will save you more money in the long run by paying a little bit more for your gas or potentially having to take public transit and living further out, but having a fixed monthly amount you're paying on your house than to not. If you can't get control over that, then that amount is potentially just going to rise every single year, and that's something you really need to try to get a hold of. So, you know, what's the long and the short? What's the takeaway? The takeaway is, I am with each piece of news that comes down the pike, I am more and more convinced that bad things are coming. If you're a seller, I think that's the only group we didn't give a suggestion to. Get your house sold now. I think this is the best time to do it. Again, I think it's unrealistic to expect interest rates to be a thing that you need to worry about in terms of empowering your buyers to be able to purchase your home. But I would say that this is a really good time for you to get that property sold. If selling is something you feel like you need to do, take advantage of a market that's in a fairly good position right now, almost everywhere, ridiculously so in areas like where I am. And just get that thing sold and move on to wherever you're headed. And of course, do your own homework. I mean, you look at these things and decide whether or not you think they're bad news. But I'll tell you, an awful lot of this feels an awful lot like 2007 and 2008 all over again. So sleep well, America. Again, the best way to stay in contact with me is through the website, www.therebelbroker.com. Feel free to visit me there. You can find the Twitter feed. You can find links to the Facebook page. If they're not working right now, they will be working within the next day. I'll be checking those again, either right after I do this show or first thing tomorrow morning. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, send me a message or call me. Contact information is, again, also at therebelbroker.com. Thanks for listening, folks. Talk to y'all tomorrow.